anything that targeted sort of that demographic since like A Different World or Spike Lee School Days. I haven't seen anything. And this is even more different because it's also trans-African as well.
If I may just ask you about that particular term, that term you use, trans-Africa, where has that come from? How did that evolve? I mean, I think you're the very first person I've ever heard use this term.
Yeah. So, like, you know, I was trying to figure out what the right term was, and we've all heard pan-African. We've heard Afropolitan. I think all of these things are kind of related. And me and my associate producer stumbled on Trans-African. There's an organization that in D.C. called the Trans-Africa Forum. And Trans-Africa really just refers to being in the diaspora, being someone who is either transported, either an immigrant or first generation. So it kind of embodies, like, you know, all of the African world that has, you know, left Africa in a way. And I thought that was very interesting. And I thought that it was an interesting term because it also doesn't, you know, you could say I'm, you know, I'm Nigerian American or I'm this, but it kind of just allows you to unite yourself with a whole bunch of people who have, you know, left their motherland, whatever, and they're elsewhere. They could be in Europe, they could be in the Caribbean, they could be in the U.S. And I feel like it's really important to connect the dots. Because we all end up came from the same place anyway.
Absolutely. Yeah. I could not agree more with you. I really could not agree more with you.
Yes, that was my good sister, Esosa Edosomwan. And the moral of that interview is that not every Nigerian is a fraudster who will ask you to send your bank details so that he can remit money to you. Which brings us to the end of the show, and I'll see you next week, at which time we'll discuss this question of ignorance more fully.
You are listening to the show called Reparations in Action. This is the show that's coordinated by the African People's Solidarity Committee and the Uhuru Solidarity Movement. We are broadcasting here from Oakland, California, and we always start the show by expressing our appreciation to the African People's Socialist Party for providing us with the time to reach out and win support from potential white allies who want to get organized in a strategy to overturn this system and who want to take responsibility for our relationship on the pedestal of the stolen wealth of African and indigenous peoples. So, Uhuru, and I'm really excited about our show today. We are going to be taking on the question of Occupy Oakland, Occupy Wall Street, and the call to win participation from the white community, from the Occupy movement, in specifically the May 5th March in Court for Black Justice that's taking place in Oakland, and also the May 6th meeting at the Uhuru House to build the Oakland Freedom Summer Project. So I just would like to, once again, thank the Uhuru Movement for giving us this time on the program. And there's so much happening in the world, and so many ways you can get involved with the Uhuru Movement. We just were honored with the presence of nurse midwife Mary Karoma, who leads the work that is part of the a branch of the Uhuru Movement and an organization of the Uhuru Movement called the All African Peoples Development and Empowerment Project in Sierra Leone. It's called APDEP. APDEP is located in a number of places throughout the U.S. and in the African world. And we just convened three events in support of the Maternal and Infant Health Clinic in Sierra Leone and also the economic development work there that is so important. And so I just wanted to, just put that out because we had a number of people in Oakland who got a chance to hear Nurse Mary Karoma and just hear about the amazing work that is done with very little resources to challenge the massive theft of African resources and to put the power into the hands of African people in Sierra Leone to challenge the fact that 1 out of 8 women are dying in childbirth, an unnecessary situation, and also to make the connection to the situation here where Black women and babies are dying in alarming numbers. And the attacks on African people come not only through the hands of the police and the police occupation, the white nationalist violence that we saw with one recent example was, of course, the killing of Trayvon Martin by George Zimmerman. But the attacks come down on the entire African family and African community. So I think that came out pretty clearly through the events with Nurse Mary Karoma and the Birth Justice Fair yesterday, which had participation from Occupy Parenting and Pregnancy, or Decolonized Parenting and Pregnancy Caucus, which is part of Occupy Oakland. So today we're going to go back to October of 2011 to review the intervention that Chairman Omali Yeshitela made in the whole Occupy Oakland struggle, which was just about 2 weeks, a little less than 2 weeks after Occupy Oakland actually started the encampment at Oscar Grant Plaza. And so Chairman Omali Yeshitela was in town for a day in solidarity with African people, our annual event put on by the African People Solidarity Committee and Uhuru Solidarity Movement. And he was able to speak to the People of Color Caucus that took place at Oscar Grant Plaza on October 15th. So we're going to review that because it's a really important criticism of the Occupy Wall Street movement. And also, it's just, it's so relevant to the work that we're continuing to do 6 months later, And later on the program, we're going to hear, after just going over a little bit about the political developments in Oakland, regarding the struggle of the African community to challenge the policies of police containment, well, we will also review the events with Occupy Oakland and what's happened over the last 6 months. And then we'll hear a clip from Diop Olugbala, who is the chair of the Oakland Freedom Summer Project and also the president of the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement, who spoke at an Oakland Occupy Oakland General Assembly meeting just last week. And we'll also hear a clip from his presentation at the Uhuru House, explaining why the March for Black Justice is necessary, the March in Court for Black Justice is necessary. This is something that we want all white people to support. Whether you're in Oakland or not, you need to know this is happening. This is also happening around the country where the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement exists, where the organization is really pointing out the fact that the city governments kill 1,000 Trayvon Martins, that this is nothing new, that we can't just keep being shocked by this type of white nationalist violence, that it happens all the time, and it happens in our name. So we must take a stand, and the solution is not just some kind of anti-police brutality march, but a deep and profound, you know, mobilization and call for resources to support power and in the hands of the African community. And so that's what Oakland Freedom Summer is about. And we want everyone to mark their calendars. Everybody should be coming in, or, you know, considering coming in to Oakland in July of this year, because not only will you be participating in something historic, but you will also receive incredible political education and make the transformation of the African community in Oakland a reality with the building of the Uhuru Jiko Kitchen, which will get started this summer through the work that we do. So I wanted to go ahead and turn to Chairman Omali Yeshitela speaking at Oscar Grant Plaza. And this was, like I said, was shortly after Occupy started, and in Oakland, I think Occupy Oakland started in October, on October 4th. So this is just about a week and a half after the encampment started. So we'll go ahead and hear that presentation that we are part of that presentation that he made.
Genocide. Wall Street, if it simply want to be involved in a takeover of Occupy Wall Street, if it simply means replacing the ones who control Wall Street with somebody else. We say that we want to overthrow Wall Street. We want talking about a movement that would actually be involved in overturning a social system that's built on slavery
and built on colonialism and genocide. This whole social system has to go, and Wall Street is simply one expression of this social system. When you look at the mayor of Oakland, that's a Wall Street mayor. When you look at armies killing people in Iraq, those are Wall Street armies. When you look at the threat that's being made against Hugo Chavez in Venezuela because they're taking back their resources, that's a Wall Street threat. And the same thing is true about the conditions of Africans and indigenous people right here in this country. That's Wall Street police that's saying now they have gang, gang initiative. That's a Wall Street initiative that's designed to try to protect the corporations and the interests of Wall Street as opposed to the interests of the various people who are oppressed. Because we live in a country now where just a few years ago, America was recognized as a place that used police dogs, water hoses, electric prods, and various kinds of brutality to suppress the African masses. Now we live in a place where we want to pretend that the African, young African male is the threat to civilization and stability, and that's obviously nonsense. So I'm just saying that I think this is important what you are doing. Because actually the Africans and the indigenous peoples here have been leading the struggle for a long time. When I see Occupy Wall Street, I want to say welcome to the struggle. That's what I want to say, but it actually has to be somebody who is entering into the struggle and not trying to salvage the ability to go to the mall in safety and to have iPods and the rest of that, but to participate in the struggle that the whole world is involved in now. And the fact is, we're talking about a crisis, economic crisis in this country, is because it's a parasitic economy. It's a parasitic economy. It's a parasitic economy that has brought wealth to America, to Europe, at the expense of oppressed peoples around the world. We're talking about an economic crisis that makes the question of the ability of Wall Street to not only be profitable, but also people who used to be profitable. The reason they can't be comfortable anymore is because people in Iraq are saying we want our oil for our own use. And the people around South America are saying we want our resources for our own. There are no banana republics anymore. People are rising up everywhere. And that's why the economic crisis has struck Europe and struck North America and most of the world. Because there's a shift now that the oppressed peoples are taking back our resources and a parasitic economy, a parasitic social system has no place to turn, and so it's turning inward to some extent, and so people are feeling the squeeze now, and they don't have the 401, the security of a 401k, is that what it's called? The 401k that they used to be able to experience. They don't have the security of being able to go to shopping malls where they can buy cheaply stolen resources that's come from Mexico or come from other places where there are slave wages. And so many of the people here are motivated by the fact that they can't get what they used to be able to get as a consequence of colonial conquest, imperial conquest. That's why it's so important that we are here, because our objective has to be to overturn this relationship that America and Europe has with the oppressed peoples of the world. So that's my intervention, you know. And I think it's extremely important because you are joining now people all over the world. And I'm not talking about the Occupy Wall Street people. I'm talking about people who are resisting in Iraq, Venezuela, in Cuba, Bolivia, people who are, how many thousands of people rose up just in August in England, all those young African people rising up to fight back. People around the world are fighting against a social system, and they're not fighting for the privilege to have to go to the mall. They're fighting to take back our lives because we live in a world where half the people exist or try to exist off $2.50 U.S. cents a day, where people in Africa spend all day just trying to earn enough to live for that day. Right. That's Wall Street poverty. And people have been fighting that for years, and now the table is turned, and the crisis of imperialism is being experienced more and more by people inside this country, where we want to overturn imperialism, not just have Wall Street be able to give us what it used to give us, quote unquote. The system has got to go because it's a parasitic social system that requires the vast majority of the people on earth to be deprived and oppressed and in Africa, the richest continent on earth in terms of natural resources, 12 million square miles of richness, where people in Sierra Leone dig up diamonds, some of the best diamonds in the world. They earn for doing that something like 32 cents and a cup of rice a day doing that. We're talking about Steve Jobs and computers.
Well, and cell phones. Well, the fact is, in Congo, the coltan, that's the mineral that's necessary for cell phones and computers, 87% of that is in Congo. But the people in Congo didn't reap the rewards that Steve Jobs got. Nobody's memorializing them. Instead, they're victims of proxy wars by Wall Street. Proxy wars that's resulted in some 7 million people dying since 1998. And they are starving as a consequence of that. So only thing I'm saying is let's make a struggle against this social system. Barack Obama is a Wall Street president.
That's right.
And
that's right.
And your congressperson is a Wall Street congressperson. It's a whole rotten social system. And who represents it, something is wrong with them if they're willing to represent imperialism.
All right, Uhuru. So that, again, was Chairman Omali Yeshitela speaking at the Occupy Oakland People of Color Caucus back in October of 2011, just shortly after the Occupy Oakland began. And I think it was a really seminal, really important intervention that Chairman Omali Yeshitela made, criticism of the Occupy movement and challenge to the Occupy movement. And that's what we're doing. We're making this challenge that if we are talking about Wall Street, that we have to go deeper, that we have to go to the roots, that we have to see that there's no future that we want that is based on the resources that have been stolen from African and indigenous peoples around the world, that we can't fight, as the chairman was saying, for the right to go to the mall or get, you know, the resources of Congo so that we can have these electronics that rob African people of the ability to have life. There's no future where we can just struggle, you know, to pay off a loan or something. I mean, that it really has to go deep. And we want the white community and the Occupy movement to hear this challenge. And I just want to read a little bit of our position around a call to the white community and the Occupy movement to support the March and Court for Black Justice. And then we're going to hear from Diapo Lugbala, who is leading that work here in Oakland, California, as the chair of the Oakland Freedom Summer Project and as the president of the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement. So it says, a call to the white community in the Occupy movement, support the March and Court for Black Justice. All over the U.S. and the world, African people are rising up in outrage at the murder of 17-year-old Trayvon Martin by George Zimmerman. Who, you know, this was actually written before he was arrested. But the murder of Trayvon is but one more assault on the war on the African community that numbers thousands of black people among its casualties. Oscar Grant, Jody Woodfox, and Derek Jones from Oakland are among the war dead. For the last 400 years, African and Mexican communities have lived under a relentless, violent U.S. colonial occupation, no different than the U.S. occupation of Afghanistan or the Israeli occupation of Palestine, with tanks, helicopters, SWAT, and ICE forces, and massive imprisonment. In the past few months, predominantly white Occupy participants experienced the brutal hand of the Oakland Police Department. Unusual for white people from whom the violence of the state is generally hidden. This police brutality has gained a lot of media coverage and much outcry in the Bay Area. And I just want to stop to kind of reiterate that, because it was, if you remember back in the fall, just shortly after the chairman made that presentation, the Oscar Grant Plaza was raided for the first time, and there were multiple police agencies that came in with tear gas, flash grenades, and there was also Scott Olson, who was a Iraq war veteran who got hit and injured to his injury to his skull and faced critical situation. And did survive that, but since that raid, there's also been numerous attacks on demonstrations, and the biggest one lately was the January 28th I think it was called the move-in mobilization, and women and children and all types of people were attacked in broad daylight by the Oakland Police Department with flash grenades and tear gas. And this brutality, you know, has been well publicized among the Occupy movement, and it should be publicized, but it needs to be put into a context of the all-out war on the African community. So we say to focus on police violence against the white protesters, and yes, not all of them are white, but most of them are white, without acknowledging the all-out war on the African community is opportunism, selling out the black community for our own gains. This system of capitalism was built and maintained on the enslavement of African people, the genocide of indigenous people, and the colonial war, giving white people prosperity, democracy, and the American dream, in quotes, at the expense of the majority of the peoples of the world. The job of the U.S. military, police, prisons, and courts, whether here or abroad, is to uphold this relationship and this system as a whole. It is no mystery why Zimmerman took so long to be arrested, and why criminals hold position in government. Therefore, oppressed peoples are resisting and struggling for self-determination, control over their resources, their land, governments, and courts. This is why the U.S. is experiencing economic crisis. It can no longer steal the resources, occupy whole countries, and murder oppressed people for our benefit without paying a price. The U.S. ruling class is no longer able to share the stolen loot with the general white population as it once has. For the first time, white youth are growing successively poorer than their parents. Because of this, white people have decided to occupy. But where was Occupy when Africans were being sold into slavery and when the indigenous people were being forced into concentration camps? Occupy must become a movement through which white people turn our backs on the U.S. government and ruling class and join in solidarity with Africans and others struggling for liberation and real justice. White people must unite with the struggle to take the power over the courts, police, and prisons away from the oppressors and into the hands of African and other oppressed people themselves. The Court for Black Justice, organized by the African working class-led Uhuru movement, is the concrete manifestation of true justice for humanity. Support the May 5th March in Court for Black Justice. So this is a really important challenge, call, appeal to the Occupy movement, and specifically to Occupy Oakland. And I know that there's been an overwhelmingly positive response to the call to participate in the May 5th March in Court for Black Justice. There have been forces who criticize our criticism, you know, claiming that Occupy Oakland is not all white. And we do recognize that there, of course, Oakland is not all white. And there's been definitely a history in this area, and most recently with the struggles of justice for Oscar Grant, in people of different nationalities being involved in the and being involved in the struggles to challenge police brutality. However, you know, what we're saying and what Comrade President Diop Oligbala has really made clear is that these are symptoms of colonialism, that the real challenge of to colonialism comes from the anti-colonial struggle, and that you know, we need to recognize the leadership of the African Working Class Party and the leadership of African people over their own liberation. And that's what's missing, you know, and that's what we're challenging the occupiers to do. You know, I mean, this is a big challenge because it's much easier to sort of be in this generalized movement, or, you know, I guess I don't think it's easier. I think that what is more honest and clear is the strategy of the African People's Socialist Party and the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement. But you know, we're calling on the entire white community, because it is a real recognition of the nature of the social system and the role that white people have played within it. It's time for us to take a stand, point blank, you know, clear and simple. So I wanted to sum up those things and talk about a little bit just about our recent work and on-the-ground work to win people in Occupy Oakland and the general white community to the March and Court for Black Justice. So right now you are listening to Reparations in Action. This is the show on Uhuru Radio that's coordinated by the African People's Solidarity Committee and Uhuru Solidarity Movement. And we're broadcasting from Oakland, California. I want to give people a heads up to get your plane ticket, register for our Uhuru Solidarity Movement National Convention, which is going to be held on June 9th and 10th in Philadelphia. And this is called Occupy Imperialism, Crisis, Resistance, and Solidarity with the Liberation of Africans and Oppressed Peoples. This will be a really important convention because what we want you to do is to join. And you can go to uhurusolidarity.org and join. You can become a sustainer. You can give a minimum of $5 a month and become a real sustainer of the organization. So we can go out, we can expand this work into the white community. We can challenge the white nationalist attacks that are coming down on the African community by fighting white people who will no longer stand for it, who are disgusted by it, and who want to stand out and stand up for something different, something fundamentally different, which is, you know, African people on their own terms organizing for power in their own hands. So another aspect of the convention is, says, Trayvon is not alone. Stop the war in the African community. Attend the USM National Convention. And the keynote speaker will be our chairman, who you heard a bit on the show, Omali Yeshitela of the African People's Socialist Party and Uhuru Movement founder. He's also the founder of the Burning Spear newspaper. Our chairwoman of the African People's Solidarity Committee, Penny Hess, will be a featured speaker. And also Glenn Ford, who is the editor of Black Agenda Report and a member of the Black is Back Coalition for Social Justice, Peace, and Reparations. So I just wanted to put that out. Please mark your calendars. If you're coming from the West Coast, we need to get our tickets and get to Philadelphia. We want to have a contingent from the West Coast for sure. So next, I'm going to turn to last week. We accompanied President Diapa Lugbala of the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement to the Occupy Oakland General Assembly meeting. And so I wanted to play a bit of that for you because I think it's instructive about just how, I mean, the Occupy Oakland forces are constantly being attacked for what they do, but Diop really calls on them to put that in the context of a counterinsurgency war on the African community. So here's Diapa Lugbala.
Solutions, how we can concretely deal with this very more northern ones included the proposal to hold or to have a petition that would directly oppose the city's attempt to criminalize Occupy Oakland. So that was one resolution or proposal that came forth. There was also, you know, a lot of like ideological discussion in terms of, you know, what the nature of the problem is and, you know, the need to work more closely with community organizations, you know, unions and workers that Occupy has stood in solidarity with around, you know, labor strikes and other related issues. So those were some other, you know, concrete type of proposals that came forth. There was also, which I believe was a very important discussion around the general question of what we would refer to as counterinsurgency, which is essentially what we're looking at when we see the government's attempts to criminalize and label Occupy a terrorist organization. We're talking about a strategic attempt by the government to undermine any type of struggle or any type of organized effort to change the relations of power in the city of Hope and in this country and in this world. And as a representative of the Uhuru movement, which is the leadership of the African working class in Oakland and throughout the world, we are very familiar with this question of counterinsurgency. And so, as a representative of the Uhuru movement, I open up our understanding of this question of counterinsurgency. Because when you look at what the police do to Occupy every time you hold a demonstration, when you look at the city trying to call you terrorist organizations, essentially, you're looking at the same response that the U.S. government came down on the Black Power movement of the 1960s with. That's essentially what you're looking at. It's an attempt by the government to prevent any type of struggle from occurring that would represent the interests of the people as opposed to the white ruling class. But one thing that I wanted to offer up in terms of how we can make a more effective struggle, not only to defend Occupy, but more importantly, how we can address the real issue of police, because the fundamental issue is that the police represent an occupying army in the oppressed and colonized African and Mexican communities in Oakland and throughout the world. And so the whole movement, we are engaged in a struggle to win power in the capacity for self-governance in the African community. One brother that was in the breakout session talked about how a survey was conducted by the Oakland Police Department in which it was revealed that the people of East and West Oakland are far more concerned about the crime that the police commit against the people than they are concerned with the so-called crime that the people commit in the community. So that's a very, very glaring type of statement, and it reflects what the real relationship that the police have to the masses of people in the city and what it's going to require to really even stop the police aggression of Occupy. And so we called on one of the proposals was for Occupy to unite with the court for Black Justice that's going to be held on May 5th. And we'll talk more about that later on. So these are some concrete resolutions that came out of that working group. I look forward to hearing more of the discussion I was in and other breakout sessions as well.
Uhuru, so I apologize for the sound. I was hoping that that sound would come through a little bit better, but that was President Diop Olugbala of the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement. He's also the chair of the Oakland Freedom Summer Project. He was speaking at the General Assembly meeting of Occupy Oakland last Sunday, and we are just, you know, really building the momentum for May 5th, which is the March in Court for Black Justice. And then on the next day at the Uhuru House is the Oakland Freedom Summer Project mobilization around the renovation of the community center, building a community kitchen, commercial kitchen in East Oakland. So I'm going to say more about that. But in any case, one of the things that Diop was raising, you know, because Occupy Oakland apparently, you know, was deemed to be a terrorist organization by the city. And of course, we don't unite with that. We know who the real terrorists are. However, there's an anti-repression committee of Occupy Oakland, and we just really make the challenge that we cannot see the attacks on Occupy Oakland out of the context of the all-out war on the African community that takes place every single day, and is the basis. I know there was a show a couple weeks ago that Comrade Chairwoman Penny Hess led around the murder of little Bobby Hutton, the first member of the Black Panther Party. And many people in Oakland like to raise up the Black Panther Party and you know, kind of utilize the legacy of the Panthers and Oakland being the birthplace of the Black Panther Party. And people, you know, people acknowledge that important history for all kinds of reasons. But the problem is that we can't raise, you know, we have to understand that the Panthers were created as the Black Panther Party for self-defense in response to the Oakland Police Department's terror on African people. And so, you know, we cannot raise up, you know, the attacks that may come down, you know, on people in Occupy outside of that context of who the Oakland Police Department, you know, really has targeted for decades. And in fact, the OPD was founded in, I believe, 1854, if I'm not mistaken, but it shortly after the city was founded and very shortly after the United States stole California from Mexico, and we recognize this as occupied Mexico. So it's within that context. We can't, you know, erase or not acknowledge this history. We have to be honest, and if we really want to solve the problem, we need to get behind the strategy coming from the African working class community. So I want to say those things, and I'm going to play a clip of Diop speaking at the Uhuru House. It's much clearer, and it is really the promo for the May 5th march in Court for Black Justice. So we're gonna listen to that, and then talk afterwards. Talk about the Oakland Freedom Summer Project and what you can do to support, and how you should make plans to be here in July. So here is, once again, Diop Oluwagbala speaking, and this was at the Uhuru House just last week at the Sunday Mass meeting.
So when we hold the Court for Black Justice, we're going to be hearing the testimonies from the people around all these different experiences, but we're going to get this with a people's verdict. Guilty or not guilty, based on the evidence that we heard at the court. You should know we're also going to serve a subpoena to representatives of the city government, of the police department, to give them the opportunity to defend themselves before the people. So they will have their opportunity to speak and, you know, tell their so-called side of the story, but we know the people's voice is much stronger. And we're going to hear all the evidence before coming with the people's verdict, and following that, we will have the people's sentence, which will come in the form of real demands that would solve the problems that our people face. Demands like reparations to all the victims or family members of victims of police brutality. Demands like, instead of 40% of the city's budget going towards police and prisons, 40% of the city's budget needs to go towards economic development under the leadership of the community, right? We need to have an independent community-controlled police advisory board that has the ability to fire the police that's out here attacking our community, that has the ability to subpoena the police that's committing crimes against the people. This is what we need. How the hell is internal affairs going to solve the problem? Internal affairs is part of the police department. So you know you ain't going to, as Malcolm used to say, you don't take a case to the criminal, you take a criminal to court. And that's what the Court for Black Justice is about. It's a tribunal. We're going to have three judges to hear the people's testimonies. I will serve as the people's advocate Basically, I'm the prosecuting attorney, where I'm going to make the strongest argument that I can to lock up these criminals that's in government and liberate the people. And we, as a community, have to assume responsibility to carry out the people's sentence, to build an organization that is responsible for really achieving the things that we need to live. And I want to say this real quickly. Y'all heard of Lovell Mixon? Does anybody here not know who Lovell Mixon was? Everybody knows Lovell Mixon. This is young brother. We hold Lovell Mixon up because he, when the police came to, well, not just to lock him up, but, you know, anytime the police stop a young African man in particular, you know that there's a strong likelihood that you won't make it out of that situation alive, right? But Lovell Mixon took a stand when the police stopped him. And a stand that resulted in four OPD officers leaving the planet Earth, right? And we hold Lovell Mixon up as a model, as an example of resistance against a colonial occupation of the African community. A resistance against the same type of occupation that the people of Iraq suffer at the hands of the U.S. Marines, or the people of Afghanistan suffer at the hands of the U.S. Army, right? Lovell Mixon engaged in a resistance against a colonial occupying army in the form of an open police department. But the problem with Lovell Mixon was that he was not a revolutionary in the sense that his resistance was not tied to a long-term struggle to gain power in the hands of African people, the power that we need so that we can have economic development, control of our own education, the things that our community needs. The problem is not just the fact that the cops is out here violating our rights. The problem is that we have been denied the ability to be a self-governing people, to control our own schools, to control our own resources, our own money, etc. And so the problem with Lovell Mixon was that he was not tied to organized struggle that has as its strategic objective the building of that type of power in our own hands. But we hold Lovell Mixon up as somebody who engaged in resistance. And that type of resistance needs to be part of an ongoing struggle for community control of police. Because, you know, it's one thing when talk about how the police did that to you, and, even do so with a strike or a protest or a rally. But it's a whole other thing, especially in the eyes of the police, when they know that it's forces like Lovell Mixon out here who is willing to really engage in serious criticism against what the police do to our people. What Lovell did happened only a couple of months after the police murdered Oscar Grant. And that sent a serious message to every police officer in the Bay Area and around the country that there's a strong possibility that if you want to Oscar Grant us, that we will Lovell Mixon you, right? And so that's the type of struggle that needs to be part of this process of self-governance that we're talking about. So I say that all to say that we're serious. And we're serious about freedom for our people because we don't want to see no more Trayvon Martins, no more Jeremiah Stovells, etc. You know, we want to see a future for our black babies. And this should not be anything that oppressed people are not willing to do to ensure a future for our people. So I think it's necessary to say this so that you understand where we're coming from. And we want to move forward as a united community. Whoa. Kingston to Cape Town, touch one, touch all. House niggas stay down, touch one, touch all. New York to LA, touch one, touch all. Nothing but cellmates.
So, once again, that was Diop Olugbala, who is the chair of the Oakland Freedom Summer Project and leads the work to build the May 5th March and Court for Black Justice that's going to, let me give out the specifics of that mobilization so you'll know about it. That is taking place on Saturday, May 5th. It's going to start at noon. We are going to gather at the bus terminal at Eastmont Mall, which is at 73rd and MacArthur. There'll be a march to travel east on MacArthur and end at the Uhuru House, which is located at 7911 MacArthur. And the court begins at 2 p.m. at the Uhuru House. And like Diop said, there will be judges who will be reviewing along with all the participants. All of us who come out will be reviewing the testimony, from victims of police violence, and we have on board the families of Oscar Grant, families of Lavelle Mixon, other families in Oakland and also in San Francisco who have either been murdered or brutalized by the police department. And we are inviting everyone to participate from the white community in terms of coming out to the march. This is so important, and I know there's a lot of people in Occupy mobilizing for this May 1st strike, and we need to have you see this march as equally, if not more important, because it's about the African working class seizing political power, being the leadership of a strategy that will overturn this system, you know, and we have to see that, you know, as white people, we have had a stake in maintaining the status quo, and if we really want to change the status quo, we have to get behind a strategy of the oppressed peoples themselves and African people themselves. So join that march. And I wanted to, you know, just let people know we had a press conference at City Hall. Another thing that I wanted to mention, because it was a very powerful press conference. I had wanted to play you some sound from that, but it's not quite available yet. But it was really important because it was also took place in Philadelphia, where the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement stated that the city of Philadelphia has killed 1,000 Trayvons, and we participated under the leadership of the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement in a press conference on last Tuesday to say that the city of Oakland has killed 1,000 Trayvons. And this was, you know, really just signaling the fact that, you know, Trayvon Martin and masses of Africans are hunted down like animals because the African community does not have power, that racism is not the problem, you know, and that white people must unite with the struggle for black power. So, you know, that's what we're saying over and over again, and we want you to hear the message. And some statistics about Oakland. The city of Oakland spends 40% of its budget, its billion-dollar annual budget, on police. Only half of 1% is spent on economic development. African people are 5% of the California population, but over 50% of the prison population. 1,000-plus complaints are filed with OPD, Internal Affairs Department, each year. And, you know, you have to ask yourself how many officers have been disciplined. You know, I'm not aware of any. You know, I mean, being on administrative leave is not being disciplined. People know this. The cop, Johannes Messerli, who was a BART, you know, Bay Area Rapid Transit, he was essentially like a, you know, subway, a transit cop, is walking free today. You know, he served less than 2 years for killing Oscar Grant on the platform of the Fruitvale BART station while Oscar Grant was lying on his belly. So, you know, this is a serious situation. We have to be involved. We have to make this a part of our daily existence to challenge this war on the African community. And the solution to this, like we've been saying, is African people having power over their lives. And on May 6th, so we want to build the momentum around May 5th, when the white community, when occupiers, on May 6th at the Uhuru House from 4 to 7 p.m., we're saying help wanted. Volunteer to renovate the Uhuru House, build black community self-reliance. Help with the renovation of the commercial kitchen and the meeting hall in East Oakland. Qualifications are that you be socially conscious, you be experienced in any phase of construction. Phone donation campaign, so if you know how to talk to people, come on over. Or if you desire to learn about construction or, you know, talking to people on the phone about getting materials donated, food donated, come on down. We need a general or stucco contractor. We need phone and online donations. People can go out to their local farmers market and get some commitments of food to feed the volunteers during the month of July. We need a plumber, a carpenter, an electrician. We need a roofer, and we need a mechanical engineer. So the Uhuru House represents more than 30 years of campaigns led by the Black Power movement to win African community control of the economy, housing, healthcare, education, and police. And it represents the interests of African working class people. The Uhuru House is where Huey P. Newton, the founder of the Black Panther Party, made his last public speech. And he was on the stage with our chairman, Omali Yeshitela, when he stated that you might not have the Black Panther Party, but you have the Uhuru House. So this is the legacy of the Panthers. This is the true legacy of the Panthers. The Oakland Freedom Summer Project is one aspect of the campaign to renovate the Uhuru House that will create a cutting-edge meeting space as well as a licensed commercial kitchen accessible to the African community. This is addressing the fact that 75 cents of every retail dollar leaves East Oakland. And that's a crime. That money needs to stay in the community and develop the community. So we're calling on people to come to May 6th and to, like I've been saying, mark your calendars for July. In July, the Oakland Freedom Summer Project is going to involve students, artists, computer technicians, carpenters, plumbers, and electricians. And young people and workers to come and participate. It's a multifaceted project and will be accomplished by hands-on, on-the-ground training through political struggle and building and consolidating the existing institutions of the African Liberation Movement. This has really been placed in the context of other Freedom Summers, the Mississippi Freedom Summer Project of 1964, the Oakland Summer Project of 1984, and the St. Petersburg, Florida Summer Project of 2011. Years of organized Black Power political work had been done in those locations, making them prime venues for young people to come and work for the purpose of advancing the people's struggle to be free. So we're saying, you know, the same is true in present-day Oakland. This is the birthplace of the Black Panthers and the site where the Uhuru movement has led many, many struggles around community control of housing, healthcare, police, and education, etc. So we want you to get involved. And how do you get involved? So you can go to uhurusummerproject.org, and there is a registration page. You can go ahead and register. Let us know what dates you can participate. And again, it's July 9th through the 29th. Do you need housing? Let us know about your needs. What other needs do you have? And we're asking people to make donations. So go ahead and do that. uhurusummerproject.org. Even if you don't know exact dates yet, many, many people have time during the summer. Teachers, students, people who are out of work, you know, you should come and put in some work with us. It's the most fulfilling type of work that you will ever do, being involved in this, and it will change you. So to get in touch with us, you can contact info@uhurusummerproject.org. I also want to give out the email for the Uhuru Solidarity Movement Oakland, which is oakland@uhurusolidarity.org. Don't forget to join. Take out your membership at uhurusolidarity.org. This is the way that you can really show us, you know, that you're serious about this, that you want to contribute, that you want to be a part of it. It's not just, yeah, I agree, but yes, I unite with this, and I want to participate. That's what we need from people, real commitment. On whatever level you can do, but real commitment that you will be there, that you are with us, that you are with the African community's struggle for self-determination. So I just want to mention real quick for people who are in Oakland that there is the meeting at the Uhuru House at 4 o'clock today, Pacific time, and that